Now. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
It's not about what's in the pipelines, gang. It's that it happened at all. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, today the 10th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It has been 3 days now that that pipeline system up the East Coast has been shut down. There is no supply problem, and so far, no real price hikes. Colonial Pipeline says it is hoping to get some kind of service restored by the end of the week. The FBI says it knows who did it, a hacker group called DarkSide, all of which is all well and good. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, this isn't just an IT thing. It's more than just a ransomware attack, right? It's about the operational technology behind the everyday functions that get us oil and gas and electricity and water.
Big aging industrial networks are often less protected against hackers than, say, corporate IT systems, says Patrick O'Reilly. He's the co-founder of CyberSaint Security.
It's really a challenge when you have old infrastructure because the security tends to be snap-on, ad hoc, reactive, etc.
And even though pipelines and power lines serve the public good, companies with shareholders and quarterly earnings run them. They decide how much or how little to protect them against digital bad guys, says Adam Bixler, cyber risk manager at the security firm BlueVoyant.
They have business objectives to meet, so it's difficult to justify upgrades on equipment that is running.
That's the reality. Even though hackers have taken down parts of the power grid in Ukraine, broke into a water treatment plant in Florida, and ruined nuclear centrifuges in Iran. With Colonial Pipeline, it's not clear if the hackers took control of physical systems, but Cynthia Quarterman, a former top U.S. pipeline regulator, is concerned.
I think it's an open secret that governments around the world have an in into other people's internet systems, as well as their major infrastructure.
The Biden administration plans new cyber rules for agencies and contractors in critical infrastructure. But at the Colorado School of Mines, policy professor Morgan Bazilian says unless rules of teeth and bring about industry change, hackers will return.
If you don't prioritize something, even with wake-up calls, you don't get action. And that goes for climate change and cyber attacks and everything else.
Bazilian himself sounded the alarm bells in a paper on cybersecurity and critical energy systems 7 years ago. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
$2.96, by the way. That is regular gas per gallon today, so says AAA. That is average nationwide, of course, up 6 cents on the week. And yes, if you're keeping track, the highest it's been since 2014. Speaking of prices and them going up, we are going to get the latest read on inflation Wednesday morning. Two caveats here. Number one, base effects. That is, when your prices are up a bunch from last year, as you will come Wednesday morning. Remember, the economy last year at this time was, what's the word? Oh, right, lousy. Number two, a month or two or even three of higher prices does not an inflation trend make. Now, having said that, there is the small matter of input prices, the cost of goods going into making the stuff that we buy or use or need. Exhibit A, right out the gate today, copper hit an all-time high, up 20% over the past month, that metal is. Steel is up double digits as well, as is iron ore, whence steel comes. But as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports, this is about way more than just pandemic recovery.
In some ways, what we're seeing in these metals is the same thing we're seeing across the economy.
Coming off the COVID-19 pandemic, iron production, supply is not ramping up as fast as demand is right now.
Rohan Reddy is a research analyst at Global X. Economies are booming, gobbling up materials, prices are rising, manufacturers are having to wait 3 months sometimes for steel orders. But the story of these metals is bigger, believe it or not, than the pandemic. It's tied up in big moves in the global economy.
Copper, you know, you're seeing major infrastructure initiatives come out.
China's Belt and Road Initiative, President Biden's infrastructure proposal, Europe and India's connectivity partnership. They all need basic metals. And then there is the colossus on the horizon, the shift to a greener economy. Michael Wiedma is a metals analyst with Bank of America.
If you want to take fossil fuels out of the global economy, you have to put something in.
So copper, which in particular has been on a tear, is a key ingredient in electric cars and wind turbines and batteries. Chris Berry is president of House Mountain Partners. They focus on strategic and critical metals.
This green growth phenomenon is going to involve the United States, the European Union, and China all competing for resources.
And suppliers are not ready to meet that demand. Investment in copper production has been low for the past decade. A new copper mine can take 5 to 10 years to come online, Barry says. We're going to need more copper a lot sooner than that.
I think the market is just waking up to the fact that there is an enormous demand shock on the horizon.
The world is scrubbing the rust off its metal supply chain. You can see the future of the global economy in its reflection. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Also coming this week, data point wise, retail sales are going to be a real good indicator of how we all, the humble American consumer that is, are feeling. On Wall Street today, nope. We'll have the details. I don't know why I'm laughing. When we do the numbers. The labor market conversation since the April jobs report came out on Friday has been in no small part whether pandemic unemployment benefits have convinced people they are better off staying home and collecting checks than working and collecting maybe less generous checks. You'll not be surprised to hear that that conversation has gotten political in a big, bad hurry, and it is likely to stay that way. Three states, Arkansas, Montana, and South Carolina, are pulling out of federal unemployment programs related to the pandemic. Come the end of June, people in those three states who are out of work are going to stop getting an extra $300 a week from the federal government on top of state benefits. And gig workers and the self-employed in those states aren't going to be eligible for unemployment at all. Same for people who are long-term unemployed. So Marketplace's Samantha Fields explains what that is going to mean.
The Republican governors in all three states are saying the same thing. The federal unemployment programs are too generous, and they're preventing people from wanting to go back to work. But the U.S. economy is still down more than 8 million jobs from where it was before the pandemic.
It is inconceivable in that situation that the problem is people don't want to work.
William Spriggs is an economist at Howard University. He says cutting off federal unemployment benefits right now will hurt the state's economies.
Their recoveries are going to be slowed because we know that these extra benefits kept consumption up.
If people lose their unemployment benefits and can't find work, Rachel Deutsch at the Center for Popular Democracy says there are going to be a lot more people in desperate situations.
People having to sell assets, whether it's their home or their car, people who are not able to access the medical care they need or fill prescriptions or buy enough food.
As with so much in the pandemic, masks and vaccines, these federal unemployment benefits have become politically charged, says Andrew Stettner at the Century Foundation.
It's a continuum of some ideological pandemic fatigue, you know, where they're like, okay, the state is open now. We don't need any of this additional assistance. And, you know, I want to say, honestly, some negative views of their own workforce, wanting to be lazy, wanting to live off the government, you know, rather than work.
Stettner, Spriggs, and Deutsch all expect more states to drop out of the federal unemployment programs over the next couple of weeks. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
That winter storm back in February, the one that walloped normally warm places with ice and snow and frigid air, killed more than 100 people in Texas, and it left millions without power for days. It all ended pretty quickly because snow's not going to last long in Texas. But the storm did bring some long-term economic pain, including to grapefruit growers down in the Rio Grande Valley on the border. Marketplace's Andy Euler paid a visit.
In a citrus grove along State Highway 107 south of Harlingen, Texas, I meet up with Dale Merton. This morning, he's been taking pictures of his grapefruit and chatting with insurance adjusters on site, trying to figure out how much of his harvest he can claim as a loss.
I'm one of those that had 50% coverage. And what that means basically is your deductible is 50%. So if you don't have a 50% loss, you don't even trigger. What a lot of people don't understand about insurance, you don't really, it never makes you whole.
As we walk through the grove, you can't help but notice that there's a lot of fruit on the trees. Problem is, that fruit was frozen. It's worthless. The trees, though, they're starting to show signs of new growth.
See those little balls there? That's little tiny grapefruit you're looking at.
He's encouraged, but he says those little buds certainly won't be ready to harvest next year.
Technically, I've lost two crops. The one that was being harvested for the 2021 season, and now zero crop for the 21-22 season. Yes, the trees are growing back, and that's great, but I won't have any income until the 22-23 season.
As president of a group that lobbies for the interest of Texas citrus growers, Merton says the industry as a whole might only produce 20% of the normal grapefruit crop next year.
Because it all gets back to the grower, what's he willing to spend for 20% of a crop? We're going to do everything we can to get the trees healthy again, but, man, that's expensive.
Farmers who grow other crops in South Texas are also dealing with the after effects of the freeze. Trevor Stewart at Frontera Produce in Edinburgh says just how much farmers are suffering has to do with what they were growing.
Dill, cilantro, all your parsleys, your beets, your Swiss chard, your lettuces, your celeries, that stuff was completely smoked.
Frontera grows a bunch of crops and sells them to retailers. Stewart says Frontera made out okay. They lost their first cilantro crop, but that grows back pretty quickly. And their onions? In this cavernous packing plant with an overwhelming onion smell in the air, machines are sorting the harvest. The plant floor is full of Frontera workers driving front loaders, scrambling to get the onions out to delivery trucks. Stewart says about 90% of Frontera's onion crop made it through the freeze.
We are writing the book on how these specific onions will handle cold temperatures, because these varieties that have been around, whether it's 5 years, 20 years, 30 years, have never been tested like they did this year.
Back in Harlingen, citrus grower Dale Merton's feeling tested himself these days. He says he's really counting on that insurance money and that he's even considered selling the land. He says he's going to hold out as long as he can, but wouldn't be surprised if other farmers pull up stakes.
There'll definitely be groves removed, and down here in the valley, the growth is so phenomenal, it's either going to go subdivision or, you know, in my case, I would hope that people go back into agriculture. I mean, you know, once you put something in concrete, it's kind of forever.
He knows his citrus groves probably won't be around forever. He's in his 50s and says his kids are not interested in taking over. For now, he's just focused on nurturing his grapefruit trees back to production. In the Rio Grande Valley, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Hey, you know what? David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report get out of bed early every day to get up to speed on the business and economic news so you don't have to. Check it out, would you? Coming up.
It's captured the zeitgeist a little bit.
And you thought packaging was boring? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 34 points today, about a 10%, closed at 34,742. Blue chips were up something like 300 points at one point in the session. The NASDAQ was off 350 points, 2.5%, ended things at 13,401. The S&P 500 shed 44 points, 1% on the nose, 41.88. Companies expected to thrive as the economy reopens batted away the lockdown blues today. Energy firms rose on expectations of increased demand. ExxonMobil moved up 0.2%. Southern Energy shot up 9% today. Tough day for tech stocks. Apple faded 2.5%. Google parent company Alphabet also subtracted 2.5%. But there was better news for Facebook in a recent study on American social media usage from the Pew Research Center. They found that 70% of U.S. adults have used social media sites. Okay, fine. Facebook, obviously one of the most popular. 69% of respondents saying they had used that platform. 81% said they had used YouTube, which is Google. 40% used Instagram, also Facebook. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The pandemic, as we have been telling you for a year something now, has slowed down a whole lot of economic activity in this country. Not so, though, housing, short supply, lots of demand, all y'all know the drill. Same in China. Real estate investment there last year up 7% from 2019, in part because there are limited investment options for a whole lot of Chinese people. But also, just like here, people do buy property for lots of different reasons. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports.
Chen Peng is a struggling singer-songwriter. His music is based on his life, like the song called Mom and Dad Says. It starts with ways his parents tried to guilt-trip him into marriage. One line goes, Mama says so-and-so's son is already married. Papa says, what have you achieved? Without a grandchild in my arms, I get antsy. Chen Peng has tried to appease his parents. In 2015, he took the first steps to finding a wife, which in China means buying a property. He got a media discount through a friend on a yet-to-be-built condo development.
I bought the condo because of the discount and because the payment term was stretched out, which meant I could focus on making my debut album.
6 years later, his album is out. His condo, well, when he drives us to the site on a rainy day, it's just building shells. Construction cranes are not moving, no workers are in sight. The developer has run out of money. This type of abandoned construction is so common in China, there's a name for it, a rotten tail building.
I'm already dead in a social sense. My body is alive, but my life is destroyed.
Destroyed because Chen Peng used all his savings, a chunk of his parents' money, plus credit cards for the down payment. Destroyed because without a property, he'll struggle to find a wife. Destroyed because without a condo in an upscale area, there's little hope of getting his future children into a good school. Real estate is everything here, and it accounts for 70% of household wealth in China. Further east in Shanghai, fruit farmer Ma Zuyou only invests in property and land. He grows grapes and watermelons.
Okay, so this is like a little yellow flower, and then once he pollinates it, at the base is the formation of a seedling of the watermelon. It's like the size of my fingertip.
Ma Zuyou says farmers don't earn much from farming. Instead, the big money is in demolition and compensation. China's urban expansion means a village today can turn into a shopping mall tomorrow. Initially, Ma Zuyou says he took over these fields because he got a tip-off that the government might build a road here.
But once we turned on the microphone, he got a bit coy.
I just got lucky that the government will build a road through parts of my land. Roughly 13 acres of my watermelon and grape fields will be used.
Ma Zuyo says the compensation should be enough for him to pay off his mortgage in Shanghai. Back in Zhengzhou City, singer Chen Peng says he was so desperate to get construction on his condo started again, he staged a protest. He says the police got him for illegal gathering. That brought 3 days' detention.
I am a Communist Party member. I used to think that all problems were caused by corruption, caused by a few bad people, and not with the Communist Party itself. But after my detention, I think a lot of things need to be re-examined.
Chen Peng lets off steam the only way he knows how, by playing music. This is his unreleased song about his bad property buy. He sings that homeowners want happiness, justice, but instead they've been met with police brutality. These days, Chen Peng says he lives off just potatoes, and he's still paying the mortgage on a home he may never live in. In Zhengzhou City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Packaging, the stuff that all the stuff that we buy comes wrapped in, is a $900 billion a year industry worldwide. And like many in industry this past year, packaging has had some challenges as more of us got stuff delivered to our porches instead of picking it up in person inside stores or restaurants. So a couple of 3 minutes now on packaging and its short to medium term future. Matt Reynolds is the editor of a packaging industry trade publication called Packaging World. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
I wonder if you find people paying more attention to packaging, both, you know, how it looks when it shows up on your doorstep, but also, you know, some of the not greats. I mean, I can't tell you how many cardboard boxes from Amazon we've recycled in the past 12 months, right? It's a mountain of stuff.
That's exactly what people are noticing. And I would say cardboard has increased based on, you know, the single unit size. But there's a mountain of packaging that exists in retail and food service as well. It's just hidden behind, you know, in the back room. And, you know, the consumer doesn't see that. Well, I think I was watching a commercial. It might have been an insurance commercial the other day where they have the strongest man in the world breaking down boxes for somebody. So it's kind of it's captured the zeitgeist a little bit in that people are aware of packaging. And as such, they're asking brands to be more aware of it and, you know, address sustainability as a function not only of the product contained in the container, but of the container itself.
I wonder if packaging is an industry ripe for disruption. How might that play out? Just spitball that for me.
Yeah, well, a lot's going on. People are, we've all had the experience of ordering one toothbrush that comes in a box that could hold 20 toothbrushes. And I know Amazon is working right now quite hard to address this. That there's an acronym, sorry, this is industry lingo, but it's called SIOC, and the acronym stands for Ships in Own Container. The first splash actually happened before the pandemic. And that was Procter & Gamble that came out with the Tide Eco Box.
So I don't. Yeah. Sorry, just to drill into this SIOC thing for a little while. So I don't have to open up a box to get my box of whatever it is. Just the container that it is contained in is the shipping container as well.
Exactly. So basically, what was happening is a brand was creating, whatever it might be, Tide for a retail shelf, and then if somebody wanted to use that in the e-com channel, well, then you take that item that's been optimized for a retail shelf, and then you have to figure out a way to put it in a three-dimensional square box and get that to somebody without leakage, without, you know, any breakage or anything like that. So what we're seeing brands do with SIOC is to optimize a second set of packages, not for retail, not for food service, but for e-commerce specifically. So you mentioned disruption. There's a couple of brands right now that are setting up these packaging starter kits where you pay a little bit more upfront for a subscription service where you initially receive a durable package, say a spray bottle for your kitchen sink, whatever that might be. Now you've got this beautiful, durable, and reusable packages that are just refillable over time.
Before we turn on the microphone, you were talking to me about PACX, which I guess is going to be in September. And I wonder what you're expecting to see on the convention floor, that big packaging expo, as all y'all and the rest of us start, fingers crossed, to come out of this pandemic.
Yeah, it's PACK Expo Las Vegas in late September. I think what we've seen is packaging was too efficient. Everything was done just in time. Everything was done without having to keep inventory. I think one of the big lessons learned for brands is that they need to build a little slack into the system to be able to withstand some of these shocks. At the same time, I think you've had a lot of pent-up innovation because brands have been just struggling to keep up. I think we're going to see a lot going forward at PACK Expo about packages that are optimized for their specific channel instead of one package fits all. So watching that come together over the coming years is going to be interesting as well.
Right. Matt Reynolds, he's at Packaging World. He's an editor there. Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kai. I really had fun.
This final note on the way out today, no news on Harriet Tubman replacing Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill, but there is news of the quarter. Saw this on CNN over the weekend, a new program from the U.S. Mint called American Women Quarters Program, featuring women who've made, and this is the context here, significant contributions to the United States. Sally Ride and Maya Angelou are the first two. George Washington stays on the front. The women go on the flip side. Direct your submissions to the U.S. Treasury. Attention, Secretary Janet Yellen, who gets to decide. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context, courtesy of the aforementioned discussion about whether pandemic unemployment benefits are keeping people out of the workforce. Chipotle announced today it is raising wages to an average of $15 an hour by June. Average, of course, is doing a whole lot of work there. Our daily production team includes Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Minju Park. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.